WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
All of the people around us, they say, can they be that close? Just let me stay for the record. We're giving love.
I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. 80% of Americans have siblings, and many of you are together today on Christmas Eve. You're probably in that first few hours of joy in seeing your siblings after extended separations, but you might be bracing for that blowout argument. Some evolutionary biologists say there's a genetically programmed emotional tug of war that goes on with siblings, and your relationships with your brothers and sisters are likely to be the longest ones you have in your life. So let's talk about that now. Joining me is Slate contributor Emily Yaffe. This week, she wrote about that strong sibling bond that can sometimes get ugly in a piece called Oh Brother, Why exactly do our siblings drive us crazy? Emily Yaffe, welcome to the Brian Lehrer Show.
Thank you. Nice to be here. And I apologize for my voice.
Oh, well, you know, you sound kind of husky.
It's the cold season.
So, listeners, do you have siblings? Do you love them intensely? Do they drive you crazy? Maybe a little bit of both. What do you think it stems from? Tell us why. By the way, if you are siblings and you are together for the holidays and you want to call us together, we will get you on the air. One thing that we're wondering is, has the economy affected your relationship with your sibling? 212-433-WNYC is the phone number, 212-433-9692. As always, you can go to our comments page at WNYC.org with a question or comment. So, Emily Yaffe, it makes sense that we have an increased sense of affection and loyalty to our siblings. We would donate an organ to a sibling before we donate it to a stranger. But on a genetic level, why do we feel differently about our siblings? And you were saying that some researchers are saying that it's sort of nature's way of doing the math on behalf of our genes. Explain that.
Right. Evolutionary behaviorist biologists have pointed out that your closest relatives, and this would be your parents, your offspring, and your full siblings, with them you share 50% of the genes that make you unique. So they explain this intense affiliation and love and also intense rivalry as coming out of that 50%. You're really close to them. You would sacrifice for them because these people could send your genes into the future on your behalf. On the other hand, there's a 50% gap, too. And any creature that's too self-sacrificing is not going to make it. So we're constantly in a struggle to assert ourselves and to affiliate and protect those genetically closest to us.
You give the example of breastfeeding, that it's an effective form of birth control. So natural selection would select for children that can convince their mothers to breastfeed them longer.
When I was doing research for the article, this was one of the little nuggets I liked best, because who'd ever thought of it that way? When a baby, you know, is demanding feeding, of course it's for survival. But the demands go on longer than the survival needs, longer than, you know, babies have switched to food, but they still want, and this is all mammals. We've all seen kittens or puppies still trying to nurse and the mother swatting them away. Well, lactation is a very good form of contraception. So if a baby can convince its mother to keep nursing, that baby is likely to prevent a sibling, a future rival, from being born.
Now, you know, you also talk in your article about birds and, you know, sort of fighting for the food and sort of, you know, why rivalry is naturally programmed into siblings. And yet, I mean, you know, is biology really destiny on this score?
Well, if you look at you want to shift more to just the psychology, you know, there aren't many people who look at siblings. It's kind of amazing when you think about, as you mentioned, this could be the longest familial relationship of your life. There are shelves full of literature on what your parents did to you, how to raise your children, how to get along with your spouse. There's not too much to help you through this sibling relationship, which, you know, can be a very intense, lifelong one. But the people who've looked at it, it's hard to imagine completely getting out of a sense of rivalry, because part of growing up is asserting your independence. You know, parents are supposed to love all their offspring. It doesn't matter if you're a failure, success, they should love you. But humans also want recognition, and that's conditional. That's not who you are, that's what you do. So you can understand the constant, even into adulthood, jockeying for attention and approval from the parents.
You write about a couple of the higher profile sibling rivalries. And for those Top Chef fans out there, we have a little treat. Remember this moment from the finale of the most recent season?
I just don't want Brian to be Top Chef.
Good answer.
So everybody's laughing there because, you know, they know that there's this, you know, rivalry between the two brothers, and one brother wants it because he wants to deny his other sibling that. You know, to what extent, to what extent is that sort of knowing laughter, you know, sort of really part of, you know, what happens with sibling relationships? I mean, is there something that's getting missed there?
Well, I loved that moment. I put that moment in my story. I was watching the Top Chef finale when Brian and Michael Voltaggio were both finalists. And as you heard, Michael, who eventually won, when they asked each of the three finalists, say why you should be Top Chef, Michael said, because I don't want my brother to be Top Chef. Now, imagine him saying there was, you know, someone else there who wasn't related to him. He would never say, I want to be Top Chef to prevent Kevin from becoming Top Chef. So we instinctively understood that sense of intense rivalry. That's why watching, you know, brothers, rivalrous brothers, is so much more interesting, adds an extra frisson that you don't get from just two rivals. And I think it's because of this genetic connection. I mean, look, the Bible understands it. You're only a few pages in, the first pair of siblings appear, the first murder happens, Cain and Abel.
Let's take some calls. Donna from Denville, New Jersey. Hi, you're on WNYC with Emily Yaffe of Slate Magazine.
Hi, Emily.
Hi.
I'm one of 13, second oldest.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were all breastfed. And on top of that, there is the issue of, you know, feeding, just literally feeding the rest of the kids. Just like who gets how much. Yeah, everything was portioned out. So the breastfeeding sort of, competition continues, you know, for food and other things.
Now how old are you now, Donna?
58.
So when you get together with your siblings,
yes,
are you finding
tonight
that this competition is still something that is ongoing in your relationships?
Yes, but it also helps us grow. Everybody deals with it differently, you know, but we all get through it. I mean, some, of course, don't, but many of us, we grew up in a very, very small house. So fighting was something that we did so much, you know, and so, and there was no getting out or getting away from anything. We confronted things all the time. So now as adults, we get along, most of us get along really well and love each other so much.
All right.
Well, that's great to hear. And Donna, what you're describing is a great insight that some of the psychologists talked about. These, you think of looking at young children's siblings fights. They're so petty, and yet they're so epic. And some of the psychologists have said, look, as awful as it is, it's really good preparation for adulthood. You get to play out conflict. You get to test the boundaries with your sibling in a way you can't with friends. A friend could say, that's it. Goodbye.
But Emily,
as
why?
Donna knows, your sibling's going to be there tomorrow.
Well, why does that continue as adults? I mean, clearly, you know, so I'm with you with the sort of whole natural selection thing, and, you know, people that are sort of, you know, fighting for themselves are going to get, you know, their genes naturally selected for over the course of years. But why is that a favorable behavior to display when you are in your 30s, 40s, 50s, or 60s?
Well, I think what Donna described really does describe it well. There were lots and lots of fights in childhood. There's still some rivalry and conflict, but they love each other. And so if you're lucky, you come out of those little petty fights. You're never going to completely resolve that issue. But the other side of it, the intense affiliation and affection, becomes more prominent. And I think Donna's describing that. But still, it's another thing I think a lot of people are going to experience when they go, they're back home for the holidays. Suddenly you find yourself, here you are, this competent adult. You're head of human resources at your corporation. And then you go home and you're the goofball little sister or the troublemaker brother. You're expected to pick up these old labels. So people find themselves falling into roles that have been imposed upon them.
So, Emily, you have siblings?
I'm the oldest of four.
I am the second of four, and my brother is calling in. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Daniel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
So we're talking about siblings. I'm the second. My brother's the youngest. And one of the things that Emily Yaffe is talking about in her article is how younger siblings benefit by learning how to detect lies from having older siblings. So, Daniel, I'm wondering if that's something that you ever experienced.
That my siblings lie?
That you can detect lies because you have three older siblings.
I guess that's true. First of all, I just like to say I love all of my siblings. I think they're all amazing. But you like
Andrea the best.
Andrea is definitely the best.
Oh, we're going to have fun tonight with that.
Well, it's kind of funny because we do have this strong Christmas Eve dinner tradition, and there's always one resounding fight of some kind or another. But this year, I'm keeping my mouth shut.
Oh, good.
I guess my answer would be I think that as a younger sibling, you do probably figure out certain survival strategies. Is that an ability to pick up lies? I'm not quite sure. Certainly, I feel my role in the family has, you know, been peacemaker, I think. Those are the strategies that I've learned from you guys.
I should mention, by the way, that my brother is, even though he isn't my little brother, he's a very successful filmmaker. He has a giant film that he directed called Beastly that is coming out this summer. When we go home tonight, he will be my little brother. And
there you go. I'm very grateful for the plug.
Yes, well, we're not through with the plugs for today. Emily Yaffe, what else do younger siblings get from older siblings, or vice versa? One of the things that I was talking with one of my colleagues is we both have children, and we've talked about how our older children still seem to feel a sense of loss at having not been not being the only child anymore. And I'm wondering, what do older siblings get from their younger siblings?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, even though you, as becoming parents, want to avoid this rivalry, as you found, it's inevitable. And you're right, there's a terrible trauma to the oldest child when the new object of love and rivalry comes along. One of the best things you learn from getting a younger sibling, and this is a lesson all of us need to remember, you're not the world's most important person. And boy, is there anyone better than siblings at reminding you of that every day?
I would just like to say, you know, and this may be the exception to the rule, but I've noticed with my own children, I have two children, a daughter 8 and a son who's 6, and they have sibling rivalry, but from the get-go, it's always felt like my daughter has been kind of looking out for my son. There's been a very kind of nurturing thing, and while they do flare up, as all kids do, one thing that I've noticed about them that's kind of remarkable is they bring out good things in each other. My son is very gregarious and sort of helps my daughter to be a little bit more kind of friendly and outgoing. My older daughter is very sort of imaginative and focused, and she sort of helps my son to really engage in kind of imaginative games. So they do, besides the rivalry aspect, there's a lot of positive that comes out of that, too.
How about that, Emily Yaffe? I mean, what do people get that is positive for their adult life in relating to people from having siblings?
Well, your brother just described it beautifully. I mean, that's, Daniel, you're talking about the ideal in which children have their own sense of identity and realms that they're good at. As you described, you know, your son's more gregarious, so he helps his older sister that way, and the older sister can feel this sort of motherly feeling to them. So instead of constantly going head-to-head, it helps people realize I need to carve out my own area in the world and excel at that. So that's one of the absolutely great things. And the other is something we talked about earlier is being able to get into the mind of other people. You know, you know your siblings so well. They know you so well. It's a real jump start on empathy and understanding the perspectives of others.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in, Daniel. My brother, by the way, is Daniel Barnes. He has a film, Phoebe in Wonderland, which you can find on Netflix. And his new film is Beastly. So how's that for a successful lineup? Good thing I'm in radio and not in movie directing.
Well, you see, if you had your own film coming out, would you mention his?
Thanks for calling, Daniel. Let's take another call from John from Sparta, New Jersey.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, John. You're on WNYC.
I'm saying I have an identical twin brother, and you know, for life we got along great. And all of a sudden, as we got older, more successful, my sister now has been trying to make this relationship with us that never existed, and it's become such a bitter conversation all the time. We barely even talk to each other now because of it.
What, you and your brother?
Me and my sister. She's so jealous of the relationship me and my twin brother have together growing up and competing with each other that she's trying now, as we're 30, to become part of a really close-knit relationship that was never there, and it's actually drawn us all apart from each other.
Well, that's sad. How was it when you were growing up in terms of, you know, how the three of you got along?
Growing up, me and my twin brother obviously were extremely close. You guys mentioned the Top Chef, like the Vaggio brothers. We were entirely different. We competed, but always wanted my brother, if it couldn't be me, next would have to be him. I would never want to, you know, just to go out and make sure someone did beat him just to beat him. But my sister never paid attention to us growing up until we got to a certain age, I'd say about 21 or so. We started becoming more adult and having more fun, and all of a sudden she tried to start making a relationship with us now, and it just hasn't worked out for the last 10 years or so.
Emily Yaffe of Slate, how do these situations resolve themselves? I mean, is there an ebb and a flow, or is this sort of, you know, do relationships just kind of break apart as adults?
Well, this is so sad, and this you know, describes that. This is a lifelong relationship, and they're constantly shifting. I know from talking to one psychologist who studies siblings, since there are a lot of taboos in family conversations about favoritism or roles, and she suggested it helps to break the taboo and just try without rancor or defensiveness to say, look, this is how I'm feeling, or I get the sense that you're feeling X, to sort of talk about, hey, look, how does this family function? What are our roles? And maybe we can get past that or understand, you know, the two of you could understand why your sister is so distressed. Maybe there's just a little thing you could do, but she can't articulate it. So sometimes it helps just to put it on the table in a non-rancorous way.
Thank you very much for your call, John. Let's take another call from Gibbs from the Village. Hi, Gibbs. You're on WNYC.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, all right. I have a rather, I think, unusual story. My brother and I were, I think, really best of friends until our mother died of cancer when I was 15 and he was about 11. A stepmother came into the house 6 months later. I had been the good son. My brother had been the, not bad, but shy. Things got reversed. I couldn't stand him. And he, we were very similar but also different. But I think that she played on the fact that, you know, a house divided. And I think it was to her benefit that we became, not exactly enemies, but neutral. Segway, 55 years later. I'm a psychoanalyst. My brother lives in Chicago. He's a insurance salesman. And we have reconciled. And it was largely, I think, over the fact that time goes on. We have both learned how to tolerate differences. We're older, got more sense. And I had called him because I had a, what I thought was a really great idea to make a resource manual in helping people tolerate stress and anxiety without medication. And he had just had a triple bypass. And he was never the kind of person who was psychologically minded, but we started to talk. I gave him some of my points of view. He called me back excited the next day, said, "We got to do this together. We've been doing it for the last year, practically every single day. We came up with a thing called attitude shifting, but that's not the point. He and I have rekindled what we had initially, and I think it bodes really hopeful for, that's a lot of time that goes by, but I think with intention and patience, good sense, and maybe a little bit of life experience or life occurrences, really great things can happen, and I feel blessed. And we have a great time together.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, Gibbs. Emily Offit, did you want to respond to that?
Yes, I think that was a really fascinating example of the lifetime nature of this relationship. And the brothers, in a way, were ripped apart by a stepmother perniciously trying to separate them for her own purposes. But the some of the studies of sibling, you know, there haven't been that much literature, but shows that in older age, having a sibling, having, you know, a good relationship or repairing a relationship can really help batten people against the vicissitudes of their own old age. I mean, this is a person, the only person in the world who shares your childhood history. And so to be able to have that connection and know there's someone in the world who, if I'm in trouble, I can turn to, or if he or she's in trouble, can turn to me, is a huge, as the caller said, blessing.
All right. Well, thank you very much to everyone who called, including my brother, who, by the way, is in from Los Angeles and I haven't seen yet, but I'll see you tonight. And hopefully we'll just appreciate each other and won't fight over who's cleaning up the dishes. Thank you to everyone who called. Thanks to so much to Emily Yaffe, a contributor to Slate Magazine, for talking about siblings. And when we come back, get ready to share with us what is on your holiday weekend book reading list.